Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself?
Well, I think Russell did want to change that about himself, or he wouldn't have called into the show. Hi there, I'm Carol the Coach, a.k.a. Carol Jurgensen-Sheets, and I am a certified sexual addictions therapist here every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to help you with your issues. And tonight, I'm going to be talking about group intervention and why it is essential in setting up a recovery plan that maximizes your success. If you are an addict and you're wondering, what do you do about this addiction, there are lots of different avenues that you can take. And I've got to tell you, more often than not, when you combine individual therapy with a certified sexual addictions therapist and doing your meditations and your prayers and doing the recovery reading, reading SA or SAA literature, of course I advocate reading anything by Dr. Patrick Carnes, Stephanie Carnes, getting to know the recovery model that is so advocated by certified sexual addictions therapists. I mean, there is no doubt that stopping addictive behavior is the only way to start recovery, and yet you cannot do it on your own. And tonight I'm going to be talking about why group intervention is absolutely essential to speeding up your recovery, looking at it from a different perspective. Why? Well, I got to tell you, 12-step work is so important. I would not want anybody to get into recovery and not be part of a 12-step group. It heals the wounds that you're experiencing either prior to the sexual addiction or as a result of the sexual addiction. It works on your character. It allows you to figure out what you can do to make amends. It releases you from the shame. It increases your spirituality. And more importantly, it gives you purpose. That's what the 12th step is all about, is purpose. And yet, in 12-step work, there's no crosstalk. You do not get to discuss with other men and women, with other addicts, what has worked for you and what hasn't. Now, you can do that before the group or after the 12-step meeting, but you can't do it in the 12-step meeting, and that's for a very good reason. I mean, they've got to have a system where everybody gets an opportunity to talk about what's heavy on their heart. And if everybody was interjecting during the entire meeting, you'd never get past probably person number 5 or 6. Well, in group intervention, it's different. You get to really look at your issues and get feedback from group members and contribute to what group members need. You know, it's like you don't have to reinvent the wheel, and that's why we're going to be talking about what is group work. Now, you know, there are a couple of reasons that I really believe in this. I run groups, and prior to my sexual addiction experience, I had ran over 2,000 women's groups on self-esteem and empowerment. And when we did that, we looked at issues that needed to be healed. We looked at sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse. We looked at incest. We looked at, you know, women that didn't feel good about themselves, low self-esteem, depression, anger, anxiety. And it was that experience that got me comfortable with group intervention. Then when I got my training with Dr. Patrick Carnes, he at one point said, you know what? You will not be an effective therapist unless you run a group. And when he said that, I thought, oh my gosh, I love groups. Groups are where you feel the energy. And so I immediately set out to start group work for sex addicts. And I got to tell you, been an amazing journey because I have seen the men bond with each other, help each other out, not just in their recovery, but in their life. And really, that's what it's all about. You've heard me say it before. You've got an addiction, or two, or three. Well, by the time you work on recovery, you should be way better, way healthier, more emotionally mature than 98% of the people around you. Now, I want you to be humble. I don't want you to be conceited or to be arrogant, but that's been my experience. I hang out with lots and lots of people in recovery from drugs, alcohol, sex, work, overeating, eating disorders, and people that work on their issues are always the people that I want to be around because they work on themselves. So I want to tell you, here's why I believe group work is so important. You know, it's absolutely essential to solid recovery for anybody who's suffering from a sexual addiction. And when Patrick Carnes speaks, I listen, and when he said that it's imperative that clients use the group format to reap faster therapeutic benefits, I heard him loud and clear. I mean, come on. He's a man that knows his stuff. He's written, you know, over 20 books on recovery, and he's the founder of this this movement. So I don't have to figure it out myself. When people I admire intellectually, spiritually, and purposefully make a statement, I tend to trust them. And, you know, when you're in a group, here's the magic and the beauty of it. When one person does their work, everybody else does their work too. So, you know, not everybody gets to do work in a week. Everybody should have a check-in, but not everybody gets to do their work. And I am a big believer that if Jim is doing his work about his sexual abuse, and there are other people in the group that have been abused, whether it be physically, emotionally, sexually, whatever, they watch Jim do his work, and they do their work too. Now, another benefit of group therapy is that each member holds each other accountable for their work. So, in other words, I can't recommend enough the fact that if I forget something, if I forget that somebody had a homework assignment, if I forget that somebody was teetering last week, there will be a group member that will check in and say, hey, how are you doing this week? You know, you were sexting and texting and we called you on it. How many days free of that behavior did you have? And oftentimes we use charts and calendars and our dry erase board to identify how many days have you had with successful behavior. We look at the positives. Now, I got to tell you, my group is done in 15-week increments, and certainly many of the clinicians all have different formats, and they're all fantastic. I believe in 15-week series for a variety of reasons. One is, I got to tell you, the average man goes through at least 90, 95 groups before they complete. In other words, they end up going for at least a year and a half, sometimes 2 years of group. But the beauty of 15-week increments is that they can take a break. They can get out at any point. They're really only committing to 15 weeks. I believe that it makes them work harder. And when somebody needs to leave, maybe they're a snowbird and they're heading to Florida. Maybe they have a commitment that comes up with their kids and they've got to be, they've got to go and to church meetings on Monday nights and they have to take a break from group. Maybe they've had some sort of financial concern and they can't continue for a while. Well, they open up the group for new members to come in, and then that means that we have veteran members, and seasoned members are always good role models. And then we have the newer members who are nervous and scared and ambivalent and afraid, and they get to see how confident my veterans are about what group has meant to them. Now, you all know that the benefit of a 12-step group is that support happens before, during, and after the group. Well, that's the same with my groups. I don't want you just to come to group. I want you to meet after the group, go to dinner together, help each other move, maybe hang out and go riding together on your motorcycles or play golf together. So it's not mandatory that you hang out with each other after group, but I really structure our group so that you not only get the recovery in the group, but you develop a support system where you're with other people that are working on their sexual recovery. I love that this group format is time-limited and yet open-ended. I love that more often than not, I have to kick the group members out. They aren't ready to leave. And I say, you are graduated. You're doing great. It's time for you to launch yourself out of this group. Now, I tend to have 8 to 10 group members in my group. My group is an hour and a half. I charge $50 per session, although I do take insurance. Not every psychotherapist does that. As a matter of fact, I would say more often than not, CSATs in private practice don't take insurance. Now, there's a very good reason for that. You know, we've spent about 10,000 hours and $10,000 to get this training, and so this is our specialized niche, and we do a darn good job providing service, and whatever we choose to charge is always going to be fair and honest. You know, I have met many a therapist, but the standards in my CSAT, amongst my CSAT members, oh my goodness, you know, these people work diligently on providing good service. And then the last thing that I want to do is I really want my group members to be in recovery. They should be committed to abstinence. Now, there's not a time limit. I don't say, okay, you've got to have 3 years recovery. As a matter of fact, I may have somebody who has 9 days. But I stress that abstinence is a group fundamental, and they've got to commit to that. And if they can't commit to that, group is probably not for them. Because I want each and every group member to be a benefit to each other. I get that recovery is very dicey, it's very difficult, but I can't stress enough how important it is to have recovery be your number one goal. So that's why I literally say I want you to work on abstinence. Now listen, if you have a question while I'm talking about why you would pursue groups, I want you to give me a call at 646-595-3284. Again, I want you to give me a call at 646-595-3284. And if you have any questions about group, I sincerely want you to ask me anything that you need to ask me. Okay, so we've just discussed how it's time limited. It's for 15 weeks. My groups are an hour and a half. I want your number one goal to be abstinence. And what I know about groups is that they have different formats, literally, you know, and different stages. And so I know that most people that come into group get very nervous. They want to make sure that it's safe. They end up forming group rules. And when they end up forming the group rules, then they have to decide on what are the expectations of the group. And then sometimes there's actual conflict in groups. And absolutely, they have to work hard in group. And then we end. And so those group stages are called forming and norming, storming and performing, and adjourning. And so I don't ever want any of you guys to do too much work too early in the group, because we got to set up group rules that set the stage for safety. You know, there has to be self-disclosure and boundary setting. I never want anybody to do any emotional work around any trauma that they've experienced unless there's a container for safety. And I want to help the other group members to make it safe too. Now, usually it's groups 1 through 4 whereby there's this forming stage. And so we start out with exercises that are pretty non-threatening, but help to set the theme for what you can expect in group. I ask everybody to disclose some information about themselves, and each group member will tell his story in about 15 minutes, to give a brief overview of why they're there, what their addiction is about, so that we can begin to establish some sort of commonality in the group. That's so essential that the commonality occurs. And I do a what is an addict versus what is a man exercise. And that is where I ask men to self-disclose what their idea is of a man. As a man I am, as a man I am not, and as a man I want to be. And they put in personality adjectives. Then I have them write out, as an addict I am, as an addict I am not, and as a recovering addict I want to be. And that is a very safe way of getting to know what they believe about themselves without disclosing too much information. They may write, you know, as an addict, I am dishonest. And as an addict, I am not confident. And as an addict, I want to be recovered. Or I want to be confident, recovered, honest, upfront, truthful, those kinds of things. And then I hold them to it throughout the whole group. Because, again, I want them to see what they believe about themselves as a man and how the addiction has taken over. Very important. So we start the recovery process by doing this exercise. And it will allow you as group members to contribute to your sense of self. And it also helps me to decide what is it that we need to do to make life different for you. What do we need to work on? Do we need to work on self-esteem? Do we need to work on honesty? You know, oftentimes we talk about doing a check-in every week. And a check-in in group is where you identify how you're feeling right then and there. Anybody who's been listening to the show knows that I keep it to 5 primary feelings: anger, sadness, loneliness, fear, and happiness. And you are to identify how you feel. Well, that's really hard for addicts. Addicts have shut down their feelings so they can continue with the addiction. And then also, it's very important during the check-in to identify how your week was in about 3 sentences, and last but not least, what you want to work on in group. Well, I said last but not least, but in actuality, then we do a check-in about how many days of recovery do you have. It's so important to do that because, let's face it, you're an addict, right? You have slipped. But you haven't told anybody because you believe you can get back on track. And so it's imperative that you get honest with the group. What happens in the group happens outside of group. And group members tend to move in and out of denial, and they don't stay honest. So we want you to be honest in the group. When you're honest, it helps you to break through the denial. And, you know, that's task one of what Dr. Carnes calls breaking the denial. And that's imperative to good recovery, that you break through the denial. Oftentimes in group, we will have our group members make a problem list, a secret list. They'll come up with excuses and rationales that they've used to legitimize their behavior. We'll often ask group members to come up with a consequence inventory. What we know to be true is an addict will oftentimes dabble with the addiction if the consequences haven't been great enough. So clearly, when it comes to a consequence, there's a part of me that wants you to have had some serious consequences. Men that really work this program are men that have gone to jail, have feared going to jail, have lost their families, have had a wife threaten them or a partner threaten them with divorce. And so the greater the consequences, usually the greater the success rate. You know, if you got this much pain, you've got this much reason to get healthy. And then always, in terms of breaking through the denial, you know, it's so important to be in a 12-step program, to find a sponsor, and get a good individual therapist. So we mandate that in group. We want people to do their work and work on a solid recovery plan. Again, if you have any questions, feel free to give me a call at 646-595-3284. I am 100% ready to help you understand what groups are all about. Now, one of the things I ask the guys to do as they get to know each other better in breaking the denial is to share secrets. So I have them do a what you don't know about me and my addiction exercise. We get in a circle, and each man identifies one issue that the group doesn't know about the recovery struggle. You know, this gives the group an opportunity to discuss issues that are middle circle or currently compromising to the addict. Okay, what does that mean? That means for anybody who's listening to this show and has not been to a 12-step support group, oftentimes we ask you to do an exercise where you draw three circles inside of each other. The outside circle are your healthy behaviors. The middle circle are all those behaviors that are slippery slope behaviors. You know, you think you're not doing anything wrong, even though you wouldn't want anybody to see you do it. Like if you're an addict and you're addicted to pornography, you don't want your wife to see that you're looking at swimsuit models or Sports Illustrated models, because that sends her the message that you're not working hard on your recovery. Those are middle circle behaviors. And then the inner circle behaviors are our deal breakers, you know, infidelity, pornography, voyeurism, exhibitionism, frauderism, the kinds of things that have gotten you into some serious problems. Now, task number two, according to Patrick Carnes, is understanding the illness better. And so we really encourage guys in our group to read recovery materials. And then we ask them to map out their addiction cycle and their addiction system, and to talk about with the group their most unmanageable moments, because that is imperative to remembering how bad you hurt and how bad it really was. And when you remember how bad it was, you're more likely to stay recovered. We look at all sorts of collateral indicators, and I have the guys complete a sexual history. I have them actually list from ages 0 to 17 things that have occurred in their life that were monumental and hurtful. You know, maybe their parents divorced at age 2, and maybe at age 4 he was molested by his babysitter. And maybe at age 7, his family lost their home. Maybe at age 9, they were held back in school. Age 12, they had their first sexual experience. Age 13, they discovered their first pornographic magazine. And so they go through and identify the major milestones that were trauma-based, as well as complete that sexual history. And it helps them to see oftentimes how their arousal template was created. But we're going to talk about that in another group exercise. We also, in Understand the Illness, talk about stinking thinking. So each group member has to, well, doesn't have to, but gets to talk about their life and when it became unmanageable. It's always good to remember that unmanageability because that helps to keep an addict motivated to work on his or her recovery. Now, I said his or her. I certainly work with women addicts, but I don't have never combined men and women together in a therapy group. I think it can be done, but I just have never done that. So with this stinking thinking process, oftentimes addicts are able to say, yeah, you know, A, B, and C happened to me, and I didn't get it. I did not know that this was getting worse for me, that this was a deal-breaking behavior, that this meant that I was totally enveloped with addiction. So as you're sitting here listening to me, as a listener, I want to know, can you imagine what your unmanageable moments were? Can you imagine talking with the other guys about your moments? And you know, sometimes in understanding the illness, I will have group members who just can't seem to get any major recovery under their belt. I'll have them write a love letter to their addict or to their addiction and read it to the group. That can be very, very important. You know, it makes it very clear what the priorities are of a group member if he consistently slips during group. I also talk about life skills that I believe are imperative to healthier thinking. I talk about the four tools of conflict. I talk about how to externalize anger. When I first started this business, I truly did believe that when you got into your anger, you were much more likely to work through it, process it, and let go of it. Well, what I didn't realize at the time is that that statement is actually true, but you do about 25% identifying the anger and 75% releasing it, letting it go, and creating some sort of forgiveness model, some sort of way of processing it so that you can let it go. So if you've been sexually abused as a child, if there's a lot of trauma reenactment, which means that you have experienced a lot of trauma in your life, I may have you write an anger letter, both a venomous one and a civil letter to your abuser. Now, the civil letter is just talking about the facts, but the venomous letter, it is a way for clients to let their shadow side be known. It's an opportunity for clients and my group members to be really, really ugly and angry, because oftentimes that anger is deep inside of them, and it can be at the root of why a client continues to act out with sexual addiction. Now, I got to tell you, groups 10 through 13 are usually the performing stage, and that really helps when a client surrenders to the process to get healthier. This may be when they really complete a sexual addiction history, or they list their powerless inventory, they're able to identify the financial cost worksheet and how much this addiction has cost them in gas, you know, money. Maybe they traveled out of town with prostitutes, so they had to list the cost of the prostitute, the amount of the airfare, the money they gave them. You know, you just really list how much money have you spent on this disease. And then, of course, in the recovery model, if you've ever seen Facing the Shadows, the book, Out of the Shadows is the actual book. Facing the Shadows is the workbook. You're in that book, you're supposed to list your 10 worst moments. And so I encourage them to do that. Now, I really believe it's important for each man to understand their pain body. What drives them to act out? What drives them to medicate? You know, there's typically two kinds of addictions. One is the type of addiction that is really kind of a habit disorder. You know, something that maybe has started when you were lonely at night and you didn't have anybody to talk to and you started looking at porn and you didn't really have any trauma in your childhood, but because through the weeks, the months, or the years, your life became very sedentary. And at 10 o'clock, after you watched the news, you went to the computer, you started looking at porn, and you stayed up for 2, 3, 4, 5 hours engulfing the images. Well, that addiction's a little bit different than when you've been traumatized and you're reenacting a trauma, either through self-medication or you know, if you were sexually abused as a child, and then you have an affinity for prostitution, you may be feeling some eroticized rage and acting out with prostitutes so that you're in control of a situation whereby when you were a young child, you felt out of control. So it's always very important to understand, am I an addict because I developed some really bad habits and I'm having trouble breaking them? Or am I an addict because, I have some trauma that I continue to act out and medicate myself through sexual addiction? Now, as part of the group, it's important to limit your damage from the behavior. And, you know, you want to start developing some expectations, some plans that help you to turn your life around. And that oftentimes includes a disclosure plan. And so I have an exercise that's actually a debate where half the group debates why you should disclose to your partner, to your family, your sexual addiction, and the other half of the group talks about why that would not be a good thing and the potential risks from that. And that's always a fun exercise, actually. By far, the harder of the two is talking about why you need to disclose. Because when you have worked months and months and months, years and years and years in secrecy, you're afraid to be honest. You're afraid of the consequences. And then oftentimes in a group, on a dry erase board, we will talk about, we'll talk with the group about what they might do to create a think tank and how can they brainstorm how they might approach the problem of being lonely. or, you know, when they figured out how to get around their filter on their laptop, what are some other solutions to that? Or what to do when they just want to hear the personal ads on the telephone. So when we work on damage control, that can be very healthy in terms of establishing a sobriety plan, because that is really one of the tasks that Dr. Patrick Carnes talks about. You know, he says, you know, task number 5 is establishing sobriety. And although it's not unusual for group members to have slips or relapses, but the group exercises should focus on maintaining sobriety and figuring out what one can do to stay sober. And that in itself can be very, very healthy. Group members are excellent at providing sensitivity and yet holding members accountable for a recovery plan. I had a guy who was an addict, and he was doing okay at not acting out. But boy, he had substituted his behavior with gaming. And gaming kept him detached from his wife and his kids, so he wasn't working on his family. Okay, so he was working on his addiction, but he wasn't increasing the mental health and the well-being in the family. And so, of course, the group asked him to give up the gaming. And as they were asking him to do that, he shared with the group that that wasn't the only secret he had, that he actually had an external hard drive that had extra addiction materials on it. And he hadn't shared that with us, in part because he knew that the group was going to ask him to get rid of that hard drive. And one of the guys wanted to see that he got rid of it. It wasn't just enough to say, I got rid of it. This guy says, you know, let me come over. Let's take a hammer to that external hard drive. You know, let's just beat the holy bejeebies out of it. And at first, my client was like, oh, I couldn't stand it. I'd probably start crying. That's years and years and years of materials I've saved. And within about 3 weeks, the guy's like, I definitely want you to come over. Now, establishing sobriety can be actually fun, and it can be helpful. We talk about having an emergency first aid kit, and that is when either in your phone or in an actual first aid kit, you put things in that kit that will help to keep you sober. Maybe it's pictures of your kids. Maybe it's your token or your coin that reminded you of your 90 days, your 6 months, your, you know, 1 year sobriety. Maybe it's a relapse contract. Maybe it's a letter to yourself that says, come on now, you know, if you feel like acting out, read this, get some recovery materials together, call your buddies, do whatever it takes. So establishing sobriety is really a fun exercise, and it's the infrastructure you need to make your life better. There is no doubt about it. In our groups, we chart accountability. You know, if a man is having real difficulty with recovery, we'll have him come in every week and write down how many days clean he has. And the group will ask him, and they'll challenge him. Do you think you could make that 9 days, you know, next week? Do you think you can go 3 more days than you've ever gone before? And then clearly we want to look at other parts of life. If you remember, I was talking about the 3 circles, and I said you need healthy behaviors to make a difference in your life. Well, I'm here to tell you that the personal craziness inventory is that inventory whereby clients oftentimes, their life will be a mess in lots of different areas. You know, maybe their car's a mess. Maybe they haven't worked out in 10 years. Maybe they need to get their closet together, their briefcase together. Maybe they really need to do some major landscaping. You know, they drive up to their house and they hate being there. The first thing they see are the overgrown bushes and the weeds and the fact that the lawn needs to be mowed. All those things feed into unhappiness. And when you're unhappy, you're less likely to feel recovery. And so that's where, again, a group can really be instrumental in changing the behaviors that contribute to liking yourself, having good self-esteem, and dealing with cravings and urges. You know, if I were to ask you, what are 3 healthy behaviors that offset your cravings and urges, what would you tell me? Because we ask group members to go around the group and identify at least 3 healthy behaviors. Maybe that would be, I exercise. Maybe that would be, I pick up a Bible. Maybe that would be, I listen to rock and roll and get into that aspect. Or I work on, I fish. I paint. I journal. I mean, there's a lot of things that you can do that will distract you from the cravings and the urges that are healthy. So we want the men to share that. Now, clearly, when it comes to your physical integrity, we want to know about your arousal template. And your arousal template is that thing that was developed early on in your life that says, hey, I like men. No, I like women. It says, hey, I like heavier set women. No, I like thinner athletic women. Hey, I like women who are scantily clad. No, I really like a woman who's classic and classy. Or I like men, and I like men with muscles. I mean, you know, it depends not on what your preference it is, but it's important to know what your preference is and how it developed. You know, what part did your environment play in your arousal template? What trauma may have occurred in your life that you've reenacted? You know, I had a guy in one of my groups who was molested by an African-American youth pastor. And despite the fact that he was heterosexual, when he acted out, he went to bathhouses where he could find African-American men. Again, that was his arousal template. He wasn't gay. He was heterosexual. But his sexual addiction required and requested that he find African-American men to pursue so that he could feel in control and not feel like he was the victim. And oftentimes we're looking at how emotions play into the arousal template. You know, whether you get very submissive or you're angry or you're scared. You know, what is it that happens? And what feelings do you emote? I like for the group to draw pictures of their arousal template. And I often ask my group members to come up with a metaphor for some part of their arousal template. You know, it might be a rocket ship or a gerbil on a wheel or a stretched rubber band or a boomerang. The metaphor typically acts as a reminder of the destruction that they experienced in their early childhood. You know, and so we get to look at that, and it's interesting. When people depict their issues with symbols and drawings and colors, there's something very healing about that that can occur. Sometimes it's even better than talk. Now, the last part of our tasks in group is to continue to create that culture of support. So by weeks 13 and 14, I am asking them to start participating in some sort of support group, whether it be a 12-step support group, Recovery Nation, Smart Recovery. I ask them to do that and to have some regular contact with a sponsor, with fellowship, with a mentor. It's always important for them to share a bit of themselves in the 12-step meeting. So hopefully they've learned how to do that in group. And I usually ask at least one member to be the social director. And what I mean by social director is that he is designated to get the group together to do something. You know, men are relationship-oriented, but they aren't, especially if they don't have an activity to do. So, you know, oftentimes they enjoy going to the diner and having dinner together or getting a cup of coffee. And if, you know, if they have a family, they may need to get home, but if they can at least do that four times out of the 15 weeks, they are strengthening that infrastructure and that culture of support. Now, I really want them to talk about what steps they may be in terms of the 12 steps. But I don't want them to do their work in group. That is saved for 12-step work. So I want to know what they're doing, but I don't want them to use the therapy group as a 12-step meeting. And that's really important. So if you're in a 12-step group, know that you may be talking about that a little bit, but you aren't going to be sharing your fourth step with the group. You might be talking about, yeah, it's time for you to make an amends. And we'll talk about how do you make an amends and what happens if you decide to take it that next level and do a disclosure. Now, I love the idea that in 12-step meetings you get a coin, a token, a chip. And in our group, I pass out stones as transitional objects. I pass around a basket of stones and ask each member to choose one that is relevant to him. I want them to role model why they picked their stone and what that means to you. And so sometimes a man will pick a stone that's black and layered and has lots of cracks and crevices and says, this is how my life feels. It feels really dark and, You know, there's a lot of layers to me, and I haven't even begun to let people know who I am. And then other times, a man will say, you know what, this is my third series of group, and I picked this stone because it has a little bit of gold in it, and I'm feeling like there's a little light at the end of the tunnel. I'm feeling better about myself. And that is so important. And so I typically have them do a meditation where we talk about the incredible work that they've done. And that's really, really helpful. The group go around and talk about the work that they've seen each man do. At the end of the 15 weeks, I ask them if they plan on coming back. And so it's important for them to think about, wow, what they get out of group, what might they want to work on during the next series, and are they willing to come back for another 15-week series? Now, if you remember at the beginning of this radio show, I said sometimes I actually have to kick the guys out because they don't want to leave the group. That's always been really, really important to know when it's time to let a group member go. When you have to say, hey, you know what, you've done great work, I'm graduating you. So if you have any concerns about whether group is right for you, I would encourage you to talk to a certified sexual addictions therapist and have your therapist tell you what he or she thinks. Not every therapist does group intervention. So it may be there's only a couple of groups in your entire city. But I do believe that it is an investment that makes a huge difference. And I would encourage you to do the work, to get to know men on a deeper level, and to allow them into your life to change you. That's very, very important. Okay, well, next week I'm going to have an expert in the field, as usual, talking about recovery and what, you know, every week we talk about, oh, hospitalizations or residential treatment centers or, you know, we've talked about financial ruins, what happens to men and women when they have financial problems. Well, I'm going to be talking with Greg Woodhill next week, and he works at the Center for Healthy Sex. And Greg's going to be talking about the programming that they offer and why it's important. So I appreciate you hanging in there with me tonight and learning more about group intervention. You know, I am Carol the Coach, a.k.a. Carol Jurgensen Sheets. If you want to read about healthy topics, go to my website, www.carolthecoach.com, or my sex addiction site, Sex Help with Carol the Coach. And you can download all these shows by going to Blog Talk and doing that, or going to iTunes, putting in sexual addiction, and I am the only show that comes up on sexual addiction. So you can subscribe for free and stay in tune. Thanks so much for listening to the show, and fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. We'll see you next week on Sex Help with Carol the Coach.